This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm delighted to welcome Pat Nevin, one of my favourite players from the 80s. And I'm very, very pleased that Pat agreed to come along and do a bit of a Q&A with us. I'm going to stick with the same format that we have. You know, Pat and I will share the mic. And we'll have the one that Ramsey's got. I think Ramsey's going to be Mickey Microphone. Again, put your hands up, and then we'll get to you in turn, if that makes sense. But other than that, welcome, Pat Nevin. Thank you. All right, great to see you, Pat. I'm going to share the mic with you. I mean, this is not being projected out, but we do record this, and it's actually going out on a live stream. Yeah. No, it doesn't. But you see, because we have a lot of overseas members, and they can't obviously be here, so we kind of stream it live and all of that. But other than that, you're very familiar with it. I'm going to ask the first question. It's kind of the chairman's privilege, and it's not going to be a football one. But it kind of does, kind of stream into the fact that one of the reasons why Pat was one of my big heroes in the 80s, Joy Division or the Cocteau Twins?
The toughest question. There shouldn't have to be an either or in arts. And I've kind of kept on being involved in music. I DJ in London probably once a month. It was quite a well-kept secret until Twitter happened. And then suddenly you can't keep anything a secret then. So I still do that quite a lot. So I'm still into my music. Actually, the Cocteaus became great friends of mine. But the lovely thing I had, and it was living in London, which is one of the reasons I fell madly in love with living in London, was the fact that artistically it was a great place to be. And I was able to live a kind of interesting life. And I loved playing the football. I was made incredibly welcome for the entire time I was here. But London was a place I immediately felt comfortable in, which is not always the case for youngsters coming down, particularly in the position I was at the time, because I was... some of you may or may not know the story. I'd turned down Chelsea for a year because I wanted to finish my degree. And I eventually agreed to come down, and I was on 180 quid a week as player of the year. My rent, a little caveat, as player of the year. And the rent in my flat in Earls Court, my flat that had fleas, was 100 quid. So when you took the tax out of it, I had 20 quid a week to live on as a, you know, as our player of the year. I will admit that we got bonuses if we won. And fortunately, that first year we were down here, we won the league to get promotion, and we got lots of bonuses. So I wasn't skint. I had enough to get by. But in actual fact, I was just incredibly happy because... You know, I could do things. I was a very dedicated trainer. I was a fanatical trainer. And I could go and live quite an interesting life down here. Like, I can remember one night going down to the ICA and seeing a Jesus and Mary Chain concert on a Friday night and a game on a Saturday. And, of course, nobody's any the wiser. You know, and I knew that I wouldn't be drinking. I would be home, you know, 11 o'clock, plenty of time. There was a home game. Everything's cool. Whereas anywhere else in a smaller town, you couldn't get away with that. People would be grassing you in for doing these things. But I knew I was so dedicated, and as I say, not a drinker or anything. I knew I wasn't doing anything that could affect my my fitness. I'll try and keep my answer shorter so you can get more in, right? But I just remembered one other thing. I did get into trouble once with the club. They never found out the time that I went. We always get Wednesday off, but I got a cheap flight over to Paris, got a train down to Bourges, halfway down France, to see a Cocteau Twins concert. Got the train back up, spent the night in Paris, and flew back the next morning, time for training, and nobody knew. Okay, I wasn't great at training that day, I'll admit it, right? But I did get caught once by John Hollins when he became manager, because he found out what I was doing. It was something completely different, because most nights I was running. So I was getting out and running along the embankment and doing, you know, an hour and a half just running, because I love running. So I wasn't mucking about, I wasn't being unfit. I was a fanatical fitness kind of guy. And the club runs, I was always at the front of them. And it was kind of a wee bit hidden. But Holly was furious about the fact that I was getting out. And he said, "We're not training you hard enough." And I went, "Actually, no." Anyway, that kind of gets you roughly where we are this week. We may look at the problems we've got with the team at the moment. When are they training hard enough? Are they not training hard enough? And who knows the answer to that?
That's a very, very good segue. I expect nothing less from a media professional, Pat. I think that's probably a good place to start, really. What do you think of today?
Wow, that's so hard today. Good result. Obviously, great result. I've never seen a team play that weakly and get four goals. We should have been 4-1 down after 60 minutes. I think that would have been fair. The two chances they had after half-time. Lots of problems, I think, today in the last four games. And I think Chelsea fans know that. There was a moment when the fans together started. We were 1-0 up, and it was, "Come on, Chelsea, come on, Chelsea." Now, starting watching it, you know that's people getting slightly concerned because you've spotted it. You spotted where the problem is, and I try to explain this to our commentators. I know this place well enough that I know the signs. Everybody had kind of spotted it at the same time, and it was really worrying. And but there came that moment when, I don't know if you remember, just 44:50, I think it was today. I have to do time codes all the time. And the ball was in the midfield, and Bakayoko tried to play the ball out to the right-hand side. And I'm going... And I said on 5 Live, there were 7 things wrong with that pass, right? And the final thing was, and Chelsea could lose a goal out of it. Because you should, there was two passes out to the left, Hazard was free, whatever. And there was all sorts of things. And we did, we lost a goal out of it. Sometimes you can smell it coming. So lots of things wrong. I think a lot of teams have sussed out the 3-4. 3-4-2-1. They know where the weakness is. The weakness is where they got their two chances. You know, it's behind our left attacking wing back and our left centre back who gets dragged out. So we get a lot of chances coming from there just now. That's fine. Teams are going to sort it out and suss it out and see whether we need to be adaptable. The positive is the manager was adaptable today. The coach goes and changes it. Now, he said in the press conference, I was in the press conference afterwards, and he said he didn't go to 4-4-2. Liar. We did. But how brilliantly did it work? In the end, at no point in the game did I think there was any vitality about our play, and there hasn't been for all these since Atletico, I would argue. But it brings it on, and a number of positives came out of it at that point in time. One, you know, Aspie goes to our side and he ends up scoring with a header. And you think, well, that's... Bloody hell, how'd you work that one out of me? I know I see that one coming. But you bring on Zappacosta, who puts a cross in for the goal. And you bring on William, and William puts a cross in for a goal. And you bring on Bax, and he scores two goals. Now, you either are really, really lucky, or you're kind of making a lot of good decisions later on. And I think the manager's decision-making and substitutions, although infuriatingly slow sometimes, and I feel it like everybody... They don't have work, you know, and his numbers are absolutely brilliant with it. So, for all the negatives, we're not papering over any cracks. It's not right at the moment, but a wee distance away.
Just picking up on that, Pat, it's really weird, isn't it? Because we were superb against Atletico Madrid, and it seems to have all gone a bit Pete Tong since. And there's a bit of rumbling around stuff going on behind the scenes. Do you think there's something going on? Is something not right at Chelsea at the moment?
There's a great quote I just read in a book. I'm reading a book about gene therapy. No, just genetics, right? And I shouldn't tell Gordon Strachan about that. But there's a brilliant quote by a guy called H.L. Mencken. I see him with intelligent people today. Some might know Mencken. And one of his quotes is, and I'll paraphrase it completely. It says, there's a lot of complex problems in the world which have got a solution that's simple, direct, easy, and wrong. And that's kind of what you kind of find a lot in football. So you're reading the papers that we're training too hard, and that's what the problem is. Oh, if it were so easy. And it's not going to be that. I could give you an alternative argument to every one of them. I don't know the answer, may I add, right now. If there was an easy answer, trust me, they'd have found it quite quickly, and they will. If you've never heard that the lads have been overtrained until we started losing a couple of games, and you never do, you know, so is that winding up the press, or is that some footballers who, when somebody asks them if there's something wrong, they'll quite quick to blame someone else. And I live through the players, and I know that was a kind of common thing with the guys around me. I was always looking at myself, what I was doing wrong, but a hell of a lot of them were not keen to do that, and it's just human nature. I think there is, without a doubt, there'll be something in the fact that the squad isn't big enough, right? Are there reasons for that, and what are the reasons for that? Can we adapt that, and can we change that by the time January comes round? I don't think we've been unlucky with injuries. I think we've got unbelievably lucky with injuries last season, whereas this season we're kind of, it's evening itself out. It's back on to maybe a wee bit worse, but that makes up for last year. So there's a whole multitude of things that could go on for a variety of reasons. We don't know the answer, but you find them. The one thing just before I finish is, I do think the adaptability of systems going to have to make a difference. And I think if you look at Antonio's, I researched Antonio's history quite a bit. And I used to go and see Juventus, quite Five Live, which oddly send me a lot to Turin. So I watched these teams. And the thing that used to always jump out at me is, I have no idea before I turned up what system he would play, because he's so adaptable. We've not seen it because there was no need to adapt last year. Trust me, you're going to see it. And it's good news.
Excellent, right. I think it's time. Yes, exactly.
I'm not deciding who asks.
Unfortunately, that's my job. I'm going to speak to Steve first, but I'm mindful of who's put their hand up, but do remind me. That's all right. No, I'm going to
let you do. Hi, Pat. Privileged to meet you. At any workplace, you could work with your mates, and it's great to work with them. You get that rapport, and things just click. But also in the workplace, there are the divs that you really don't like, but you've still got to work with. Now, you may or may not choose to volunteer, but I'm curious to know over your career, the players that were your mates who you really enjoyed playing with, and those that, frankly, you didn't have the same feeling.
If I come and I've asked a question, I will tell you, I will give you an honest answer. First of all, and if I can't give you one, I'll tell you why I can't give you an honest answer. Right, simple, it's easy. Don't obfuscate, just tell the truth. There was a period of time, I remember a period of time at Chelsea, because see now if two guys fight, you know, in a training ground, it's in the back pages, it's everywhere, it's trouble at the club. When I was at Chelsea, it was a fight every week. It was like, you know, it was just kind of a way of getting by. I can remember... Some of you know, there was a brilliant fight between Speedy and Colin Lee just when I arrived. There was another one between Kerry Dixon and Speedy. And then there was another one between Canners and Speedy. And then one of my favourite ones, one of the best ones, was really funny. There's a dark side to this as well, but it was a good side. One of the best ones was a game once, and it was a... We were doing a seven-a-side. Anyway, there was Joe McLaughlin at the back, and Speeds was giving him dogs. He'd be, oh, you're terrible. I know we're on, so I'll calm down with the language. So he was giving the dogs a piece, and Joe just basically got fed up with it and just walked slowly and, you know, purposefully towards Speeds at the other end of the pitch, and Speeds was going, what are you going to do? Bang! Down he went. We just played on. some one twos around him, you know. And, you know, it was kind of, so, to be honest, he wasn't the easiest guy to like. And I kind of felt it was, we didn't get on at all. But I learned to understand, because if you, I really didn't go on, and there was a, you know, many of you might have read Paul Canaville's book, which is one of the main reasons why I didn't like the way we didn't go on. But the terrible thing happened. So I had this thing where I didn't really like spending time near him, but boy, on the pitch, what an understanding. It was fabulous. I always knew where he was going to go. Always knew where Kerry was going to go. And it was a great understanding. Boy, what a good player. So you can do that and you can work together. It can be fine. But I can remember we'd been at Chelsea about 3 years. And I was, by then, an international playing with Scotland. And Speedy then get pulled into the squad because they apparently thought he was Scottish. Right, so... And of course, what do? They've got a Chelsea player who just joined the squad, so they put him in a room with me for 3 days. So I was like, so anyway, and to be fair, it was the best thing could happen because I got to understand them better. So, you know, we didn't go on, but I understood where he was coming from. We didn't agree with much, but, you know, understood where he was coming from. When we meet now, we're fine. But through my career, I'll be absolutely honest with you, I had this thing about not hanging about with footballers. It's not that I didn't like them. I didn't have a lot of interest I shared with them. They weren't going to go to see the theatre with me if I went either. I remember once, I was a friend of mine, she's a principal ballerina at the Royal Ballet. And I used to be able to stand in the wings watching the ballet at Covent Garden, which is just fabulous. And you're like, amazing. I'm not coming in the next morning going, hey guys, guess what I done? Happening, you know, and I'm saying it to you, and you all think, yeah, it's a cool thing to do. Just maybe it's better now, but it wasn't then. So, but with some guy, I mean, today I met two of my favourite people I've ever known in my life. I hadn't seen Patsy and Bumstead for a year or so, but I bumped into them today, and they're some of my favourite people, and I love them too because they had an absolute Python-esque sense of humour, totally Python-esque. It was brilliant, and still have it. So. It's kind of nice, but you don't bump into them all the time. But the stories about every team I played for and every single player I played for. And the lovely thing about my position, I was such an outsider within it that I saw the strangeness of it. I saw the weirdness of it. So I didn't dislike them. I kind of just studied them. And it was great. Anyway, that's a very long answer to a quick short question.
Thank you.
All right. I know Dan had his hand up, so... Then DJ.
Hi Pat, since you've left Chelsea, which manager have you most liked to play under and which striker you like to play with?
Ah, good question. Oddly enough, through your career, I'll go to the players to play with. I'll be honest, there weren't that many players I've played with that I've really loved playing with and that I could have an understanding at a level that I wanted to. It's an odd thing to say. Certainly a period at the start of the Premier League, I didn't really rate English football very highly. And it kind of seems a bit odd, and it might sound arrogant, but I thought it was big, powerful, forceful, and I was looking for something different. And then Barcelona came along, you know, and it was, that's kind of, I'm watching Xavi's and Iniesta's, and obviously a player like me, you know, that's, I'm going, well, that's what I was trying to do, you know, whereas... And you may well know that when I came to Chelsea, I'd never played in the wing. And they told me to go and stand out in the wing. And I'm going, why? I don't do that. So I had to relearn how to play a different system. So I wanted to put players that could do what Hazard does with Willian and it was Mata and all that sort of stuff. My current favourite player for the past 10 years or so, or 5, 6, 7 years or so in English football has been David Silva. It's because he plays football the way I was trying. Exactly the way I was trying to do it. But through my career, how many guys were like that? And you think about it, I didn't play with many. So one of them was Peter Beardsley. And he was fabulous. You often talk about, if you listen to Match of the Day, and they all talk about, oh, the great goal scorers. And now they look at stats and they talk about your Shearers or your Wright. And I'm thinking, Beardsley was better than them by miles. He was a world, world, world-class player. So if there weren't actually as many that I had a real good understanding with. But there was lots that I admired for their specific skill set. So I look back at my Chelsea time and, you know, I liked the skill set that certain ones of them had, but as a link up and understanding with them, I don't know, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to see that. I mean, certainly Bearsley, and in Scotland, when I played for the national team, obviously Kenny Dalglish was great to work with, and John Collins was brilliant, Paul McStay, they were real quality players. Any manager, and I'm completely and utterly biased here, right? Any manager who kind of trusts you is really good. And John Neil was just phenomenal for me. He just said, famously, I remember saying really early in my career as a scrawny wee kid from Glasgow, he would do a team talk and then say, and give the ball to Pat and you'll win. And me? Really? And what a belief that gives you. And I'll be fair, I worked under a lot of managers and most of them were pretty rubbish. You know, I worked under one manager who, I've rarely seen him sober, training or a game, you know, and all sorts of incredible stories. Look, it's really hard. We'll give him a code name. Let's call him Coward Hendel, right? So, now, actually, Howard and I didn't go on, right? Howard's recently died. When we played together, Howard and I didn't go on when I was at Everton. Now, quite simply, he didn't rate me and I didn't particularly rate him. But in actual fact, I didn't like that. I didn't think he was giving enough to the club because of, but he had an addiction, an illness. You know, and you can't, it's hard to blame somebody for that. But there were a couple of games we went to where the decision making was poor. And I'm thinking, there are 3,000 fans that have just travelled and spent every penny they've got to get down to this game, and you can't stay off a sauce for a minute. So I was annoyed at the time by that. When I got, maybe it was a little bit severe, and maybe, but I just was like that at the time. Oddly enough, within 2 weeks of me leaving, we met up and it was fine, and we got on great. So it's just a work thing, you know, and it's just a stress thing. So in my years, I've worked under some that have been average. I was one manager I worked under who had come in, and he would do the entire team talk. And there was one, in fact, I can give you his team talk, right? And sadly, because he died recently, and I loved the man, right? It came in, I was at Tranmere near the end of my career, and we bought this guy called Tommy Coyne, who played for Celtic and Republic of Ireland, and we had John Aldridge, myself, and we were a team, and we were just about to get promoted to Premier League. We were right there every year. And we bought Tommy Coyne, and I'd said to Tommy beforehand, look, do you know what? He's going to do something daft in this team talk. Just ignore it, okay? So the manager comes in and goes, right, lads, you're in the Wild West. No, he's really going for it this time. He says, and you're at the bar, but you want to get out. And I think we're a team talk, we've all got our kit on here, right? And he said, like, so you want to get out, so you get your guns out and you go back. And you all the way back, and you feel those doors, you know, the swing doors in the saloon, you feel them behind your back, and you get them up, and you open them, but you still don't get those guns away yet, and you go around the corner, and once you're out there on your horse, then you can put your guns away. And that's what it's like at a short corner. Tom Coyne's looking at me going, what the fuck are you doing? And this manager, Johnny King, who's, I loved him, I adored the man, and he would always do his team talk, and he would always do tactics, and then he'd walk out. And as the door shut, we all went, okay, right, what are we going to do? But it didn't matter, because he had one brilliant, brilliant talent. He could spot a player, and he'd write good players. And you know, that beats just about anything you need. So through the career, good managers. Craig Brown, I worked under him, he's a good manager as well. But to be fair, there's more average ones than good ones.
Yeah. Right, DJs?
Hiya, Pat. The other day, thanks to Tim Rolls, I wasn't there, unfortunately, because of work reasons. Tim Rolls' book, Diamonds, Dynamos and Devils. You can pay me for the plug later, Tim. In that, apparently, when Terry Venables was at Chelsea, Tommy Doherty didn't like him because Venables wanted things run his way. And as soon as the team come out of the dressing room, run the pitch. Venables was going around telling the players what to do and where to play. And when Rafa Benitez was here, I said to John Terry, because I know the players weren't that happy with Benitez, I said to John Terry, why don't you just listen to him, and when you get out on the pitch, do it your way? And John Terry said, it don't work like that. You can't do that. Now, you've just said there...
Well, you all need to do it. That's the thing, is one guy can't go out and do it. You have to come to a core agreement with the group to do that. And usually the managers get two or three, or maybe more than that, on his side. But if everyone agrees, this is what we do, then you can do it. You can't have two teams working within a team. Or you can have, but it doesn't work very well. So you're right, JT would have to get the whole group together, get them all working under him, which, even though he is, you know, Captain Lee the legend, you know, that's a big call. And to be fair, we did all right under Rafa. Yeah, he got the team quite sensible. I thought he got his playing pretty well. But it was a tough one, especially in the early days of Rafa, because we all couldn't stand him. But to be fair, he kind of did melt a few of us and thought, actually, he's doing all right. And he behaved, I thought, with quite incredible decorum.
I've got to say that he was a really nice bloke.
Rafa, I thought he was a great bloke, actually.
Really nice bloke.
Got me drafted,
Dan. Got me arrested. I'm really concerned about these scores. Who's going to read them out?
United have lost 2-1.
Excellent. City 1-3-0.
I had them down for a 4.
When Mourinho will say they won the second half 1-0.
Yeah. City 1-3-0. Newcastle beat Palace 1-0. No. Stoke 1, Bournemouth 2. Bournemouth, because we're playing them next week, running at the form. Swansea 1, Leicester 2.
Good stuff. And Celtic beat Hibernian 4-2. Which...
Sorry, man.
No, I'm not. I am not. I've done the unthinkable thing. You know, can you believe this, right? I don't know how many of you know this, right? So you're Chelsea fans. And say someone said to you, you've been Chelsea fan for 30 years, and you've decided to change. Right, unthinkable. I did that. I was a Celtic fan for 30 years of my life and changed. So whoever does that, nobody in the world does that. No, I... It was actually, as I often say to people, to quote an old NME line, it was musical differences. I didn't like some of the songs that were being sung and some of the stuff. And my son was, I was growing up in a thing. I don't have any bias or bigotry. And I'm also quite mean. So I immediately became a season ticket holder at Hibernian because I didn't want to buy a new scarf.
Okay.
I'm dodging the questions. Any other questions?
Okay, thanks, Matt. My question sort of segues a bit from what you were talking about earlier, today's game, and actually follows a little bit nicely from DJ's question, which is about the ability of a team to change the way it plays. Now, I love Antonio Conte's passion. I love to see the guy really getting stuck into the player sometimes. But I'm wondering whether, and I just appreciate your opinion on this, a manager who's constantly directing the players, seems to be micromanaging them, is he making them less flexible? Are they less able to manage the game themselves? Or am I just sort of reading too much?
No, there can be that. I remember getting many teams being annoyed by a manager shouting and bawling and telling me where to go, and I'm thinking, well, I think I know more than you about this position. I really did. You know, I think, well, I know where the weakness is. You probably don't, because you didn't play my position. So that can be quite annoying sometimes. Defenders, I'm personal guys, but they usually quite like it because it's just purely positional. So for defensive, destructive positions, it kind of works. For creatives, it's harder because if you really want... The worst thing in the world is if you're standing out in the wing and you've not had a kick of the ball for 20 minutes and everyone's saying, oh, he's a bit in and out of the game. I can't score a goal without the ball. I can't create without the ball. So you try and do something. But he wants the shape and the structure. You're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea there. So the creatives need a little bit of flexibility, without a shadow of a doubt. But the rest, I think, really, you need to keep the structure right. And the creatives don't just do what they like when they need to do their defensive stuff. So I think when I watch Antonio, most of the time when I'm watching him, he's getting that defensive line, he's getting the people to draw back and pull over. It's kind of mostly defensive. I don't see him that often micromanaging the creatives. I don't think you see him saying anything to Cesc. I don't see him saying a great deal to, you know, Eden, you know, much really. I'm kind of seeing it only come the one half, and it's in the right areas for me.
I had a couple of things, really. A very simple thing. I noticed all the shin pads they wear are really, really tiny these days. That's one point. Did you wear tiny ones or bigger ones?
Mine's were micro tiny ones. I only wore shin guards purely for one reason, because the law of the game said you have to. I wouldn't have worn them at all.
Have you ever seen someone who got caught not wearing them with a bad tackle?
I don't think I have shin card ever stops you get a broken leg. It may stop you getting a gash.
But my main point was this. I look at the game today, and I looked at the game at Roma and places like that. Who is taking responsibility on the pitch for Chelsea? I see wingers coming, and they just cross the ball, and they think someone should be at the end of it. Mm. Now, would you have done that, or would you have picked someone out?
No, I love that question. Because I changed. Another thing I changed on. Most of the time at Chelsea, I spent my time. In fact, I've been thinking about that point recently, because most of the time at Chelsea, I was absolutely specific. I will get to the byline, and I'll get into position, and I'll find you. So, like, Cesc Fabregas never plays a ball into an area. He plays it like a quarterback to your feet from wherever, right? So don't ask Cesc to put it in an area. Ask him to play the ball, because he's a genius at it, right? And I spent my whole early career always picking people out. If Kerry was at the back post, if Speeds were at the near post, if someone was for a cutback, all the way through, be it Scotland, be it Everton, be it Chelsea, always did exactly the same thing. And it kind of worked. And then I went to, as I say, after Everton, I had a choice between Galatasaray and Everton. The choices you get at football, incredible. When I left Chelsea, it was a choice between Paris Saint-Germain or Everton. And I'd agreed to go to PSG, so I'd have been a PSG player. And then my wife-to-be said to me, why are you going to PSG? She said, well, they're a big good team. And she said, no, they're not. She said, you just want to hang about in the left bank with the artists, don't you? Yes. So I signed for Everton, because it was the right football thing. Anyway, I eventually go to Tranmere, and I'm there 2 games into it. And I look up and look for John Aldridge. And he goes berserk with me. And I went, what's the problem? He goes, never look. Just play it in. I'll be there. Don't worry. All right. Well, I like this confidence. Okay, I'll try it. He was. He was absolutely phenomenal. I've never seen him like it. He was world class, John Aldridge. He was, talk about Rushy a lot. Ian Rush was a great player. Aldridge was that good. Easily that good. He had a weird career. He did well in Real Sociedad, and it was 45 goals a season. The guy was unbelievable. So Aldridge changed again in my career. If Aldo wasn't playing, I would try to pick people out. But if Aldo's on the pitch, no, get in there, put it in between the two centre-backs and the goalkeeper, he'll be there. And he was. So, oddly enough, there is no simple answer. It depends. If it's Batshuayi's playing, I'll put it in the area. I'll just put it in the area, he'll be there. Batshuayi's unbelievable at it. The rest of his game, I'm not sure.
Who...
Well, that's the point. He's a goal scorer. He is a phenomenal goal scorer. Can I tell you a story about centre forwards, right? Right, never trust centre forwards. Right. Yeah. Because they know nothing, right? They really are. Because they've never really played the game. They just stand on the end of it, right? Well, they don't. It's one of the biggest kept secrets in football. Whoever good a centre forward he was, see when you're picking for the 5-a-sides and the 7-a-sides at training, they are always last picked because they can't play. Because all they can do is kick the ball in the net. They've got great touch when there's a net there. The rest of the time, there's no vision or anything. And when I see these guys, like Aldo, I'll tell you how I wax lyrical about John Aldridge. last pick. Always last pick. Nobody, and he used to go mental. And I'll be honest with Kerry. Last pick. But you put him in front of a goal. Fabulous, best touch you've ever seen. So Bats is a bit like that. Gets abused and it's infuriating. Today, you probably noticed he's the second time the ball came to him today, he lost it and it bounced off him again. Right? And there was such a sigh and a groan around the place. And I thought, look, don't do that, guys. I know you're disappointed and we know we all know what that's a problem. But that's not what he does. What he does is get it round and you get it in that area and he'll score for you. And he will. And I said it in Five Live today. They have a wee bit of a laugh because he's been having a tough time. Say, okay, here's a wee thought piece for you. Go and have a check-up to see goals per minute. Who's the best between Harry Kane and Misha Batshuayi? And it's Batshuayi.
Chidge.
JK! In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I always wind Kerry up. I know, I adore Kerry, and he's always said that if Kerry was playing now, he'd score a whole barrel load of goals. He would. Without a shout over there.
Bear in mind, the second part of that question was who takes responsibility in the team?
For Romania. Well, we've got used to having JT for, you know, what seems like a generation. You have to remember that's weird. That's unusual. There's not many like him, and there's fewer like them than ever. Someone to take that responsibility has to be playing every week. Sensible, comfortable in their own position, playing well. And I would like it to be Gary Cahill, but Gary has ups and downs, and he's had a few. And he's not actually always first pick at the moment, so it's tough to be that core person in the group. I'd like it to be David, but he's David Luiz. And you know, he's just his personality is more frivolous than that, slightly. So it's actually hard to see. And if you're a new player, it's hard to walk in a dressing room and grab the dressing room, Bruce Scruffy, and next. So you're right. I don't think there's an obvious one. But you look around the league. You look around the league, and there's a lot of teams like that. Can I tell you my favourite David Luiz story? He's fabulous. Is it? Closer than you might think, that comment. Closer than you might think. Has anybody... I didn't do it deliberately the other day. I was walking out of the pitch a couple of weeks ago, out of the game a couple of weeks ago, and all the lads were driving out with their cars. And I'm not particularly great interest in cars. Something to get me to A to B, don't really care. But they're coming in with their big, fancy Aston Martins and the rest of it. No affair, you know, very good, and that one's very low. Right. And they're all coming with these big cars. And then in drives David Lees in his car. Has anyone ever seen this car? It's brilliant. It's like a kind of less stylish version of Postman Pat's van. But painted green. It is absolutely a scream. Only person who could get away with it. Actually, Canty's got a nice a wee VW or something like that. Anyway, but the probably a mini. It's a mini, yeah. So, but that's okay. But I kind of anyway. The story about David Lees. I adore David Lees. If you've ever heard me talking about him, I think he's fabulous. And I think if he became available, Manchester City would buy him tomorrow morning because he's perfect for that sort of team. You can play it out, you can pass it out. That sort of stuff. And he's important for, you know, and we give him abuse in our country, or others give him abuse because, you know, he'll make the odd mistake. Every defender makes the odd mistake. At least he's tried to do it being positive and do something effective. Now, I adore the fact that he's as good a passer as you'll find in the league, just about, apart from Cesc Fabregas, which is brilliant as well. But I also love the kind of effervescence of his personality. And it really, you need it in a dressing room. Because sometimes you have to get beat. Sometimes it's a rotten day in training. Some days it's just an hour and a half of walking through drills, which are dull, that you need to do to get positioning right. You need a nutter, you know. And David's got a bit of that about him, and it's really, really handy to lift spirits now and again. Oddly enough, the other guy who was like that was Diego. Diego was exactly the same. So them two together, I remember when them two together, I thought, David's coming back, and Diego, oh my God, that's going to be mental. But apparently it worked really well. And it was great. So this, the family story is, there is only one rule in the Nevin household to my daughter, Lucy, who's 22. And the one rule is, you're not allowed to marry a football player. That's the only rule. I know they're like, anything else you can do, you like, you know. But we've come to an agreement that if David Luiz comes to call, that might be okay.
All right, Pat. Bit of a silly question, really, but I can't meet you and not ask you if you remember the Newcastle home game and the dribble.
I often
you
get asked about that.
Stand and you,
yeah.
I mean, it had my jaw open. I was a teenager then. Do you remember the game?
Yeah, no, I do. It was a big game for me. We beat Newcastle. Anyone who wasn't there, we beat Newcastle 4-0. But I'd actually had an agreement with John Neil. Because I kind of like dribbling. I really love doing it. My dad had taught me how to... I'd go back a bit. My dad had gone and watched Celtic training. And the manager was Jock Steen, who was a genius. But he watched the players at the time. They won the European Cup. But they had a player called Jimmy Johnson at the time, who was a brilliant dribbler. And Jenky had done these things that made him a better dribbler. He'd learned some of them from Stanley Matthews. My dad was a coach anyway. So he got all these different things. And he taught me the methodology, which is now all you do is there's a DVD now by a guy called Will Curver. And if you want to learn how to do it, just get a Curver video, right? So anyway, I did this all my young life, and that's why I could dribble. And I love doing it. And I also noticed quite early on that fans quite liked seeing it. I picked the ball up in the 18-yard line, so, and went the length of the pitch. But every time I try and do it, the manager could always tell when I was doing it because I fancied doing it, as opposed to you doing the right thing. So I got two agreements. First one was, if we go 3 goals up, can I do what I like? And he went, yes. And thank you. That's good. That's what I want to hear. But before that, try and do the right thing. You can beat players, but I wasn't really allowed to do it. No. So, and there was another thing. So when we were 3-0 up, a minute after half time in that game, I think Burnell scored, if I remember rightly. I remember looking over at the gaff, because you don't go 3-0 up that often. And I looked over at the gaff and went, and that was me the whole rest of the game. I'm like, fun. I mean, I usually had to kind of curtail it to doing it with the ball boys and the ball girls before the game, because I like getting my touch right by doing the dribbling then. But the other thing about it was, for whatever the gaffer said, I always did one every game. And that was my hello to my dad. So my dad was up in the stand. He'd come out of the game. He had to get the 6 o'clock train back up. I couldn't get to see him. So So my way of saying hi, Dad, was to go on. He'd call it a mad Maisie dribble. Go on a mad Maisie one. And that was my way of saying hi. And sometimes it would take goal.
Man City.
No, I'm pleased with that. I love it.
What happened there?
What happened? I've told this so many times. Number one, if you've not seen the penalty, which most of you would have, but kids don't, I always tell them to go on YouTube. And it was me that put it up. It surprises people. Because it was such fun. I'd actually practiced it a couple of days before we had it this week. And scored 20 out of 20. And you didn't need to take a run up. However, it wasn't muddy that day. Whereas the day I did it, it was muddy. In actual fact. But actually, I just you know, slept, made a mistake. It was a bit rubbish. But the big problem was, as I walked away, I had to try and not be seen laughing. So, and I was pissing myself laughing. If you remember, we were 4-1 up. There was a minute to go. It was a cup game. It meant nothing. So I was walking away trying to look disappointed with my head down. But a gaffer spotted that I was laughing. They fined me for laughing. I never paid it, like. But I just thought it was absolutely hilarious. And I've kind of, people go, oh, God, what about that penalty? And I'm thinking, I thought it was one of the funniest things that ever happened. So, and because I never took myself particularly seriously, I didn't really care. So we won. That was all that mattered. I actually played quite well and made a couple of goals that day. I was quite happy about it.
Just wonder what your thought is on something that infuriates me is Courtois and his kicks out. Is that meant to happen? Is he doing it as what
when you're passing out from the back? If you get a chance, I do a lot of technical and not a lot, a number of technical analysis pieces for the BBC website, and they asked me to do them. I could do one every day or every week anyway for them, because they love the way I use all the technology and I do things. And I always say to them, no. I will only do these things when it's bloody good and you've not seen it anywhere else. Because you see the match of the day stuff and it's the same all the time. So, you know, you're not learning anything really. Well, you some things are, but not that often. So I'll do it when you get something. Now, I've only done one this season so far. And the next one's going to come out on Thursday, which I built yesterday. The one I've done this season is, it's nothing against goalkeepers, but they're not players. They're not good enough. Now, this isn't Courtois, this isn't Mignolet, this isn't... They ain't good enough. So you go and ask them to be the playmaker. It's like, it's really unfair. It's like, if whatever your job is, if you're a joiner, somebody who does any sort of work, you bring in an amateur and say, right, you go and do his job. You can't do it, because you're not as good as them. You haven't spent your entire life doing it. So you ask these keepers to go and play these balls out for the back under pressure. They're going to get caught. You're going to get into trouble. You're going to end up giving the ball away. That's not Courtois' fault. That's not the Liverpool keeper's fault. That's not any of their fault. They're not good enough to be able to do it. I love doing that play out from the back, from the keepers. That way they're trying to do it. Because I know the thinking. I know the reasoning why. And I'll explain the reason in a minute, which you probably know. But you better be good enough. As far as I can see, there's only about two in world football that are good enough.
Has he been told to do that?
Yes. So Manuel Neuer can do it. Because I think he could play Manuel Neuer in a team and he'd be good enough. He wouldn't be Bayern Munich good enough, but he'd be good enough to play it in a professional team, right? So he's good enough. I think your boy at City now is good enough. He's great. Yeah, the strict instructions. Now, there's a reason for it. I'll tell you the reason now. I have to do these things because I need to... And I don't like guessing. I want to know as well. So I went and had a look up at Man City goalkeeper's stats. Pass accuracy. So he's playing out for the back and he's under pressure. Pass accuracy at the moment is 96%. 96%. Nobody else has got that. Well, there's one other guy who's got more than him at the moment. So that's amazing that he's doing that under pressure just now. So he can play. But asking others to do it. Now, so why do you ask him? Is the following question. Well, it's simple. You want to keep the ball. And if you play the ball long, the numbers are usually 35, 65, you lose it. So you're 65% of the time, when you play the ball long, you're giving the ball away. And nobody wants to give the ball away. So that's why they're all trying really, really hard to play from the back. It's dead, dead simple. Now, if you're Barcelona, you can do it. If you're Man City, to some degree, you can now do it. And some teams can do it. And we actually get away with it most of the time. But the numbers are a bit worrying. They're not up high enough, and it's simple. It's not against Courtois. He's just not a good enough footballer to do it to a high level against the press. No, you just need to be a good footballer. I mean, some of our field players are pretty rubbish in their weak foot. Most left footers are absolutely hopeless in their right foot. Right footers can play with their left, but left footers can't play with their right. It's a strange anomaly. I don't know. I'll finish my gene book and I'll tell you, maybe. I don't know what the answer is. Well, it's practice, yes. But it's the weirdest...
If there's not many left footers around when you're playing football growing up as a kid, you're more likely to spend some time playing on the left, so you develop your other side a bit more.
Yeah, that's part of it. It's odd though. For a lot of my career, I could have counted the amount of goals that I got because I figured this out when I was like 18. So if you're playing in the right wing, if you can imagine it, and you're running into the back post, and the ball's crossed across, have a look how many left backs try and clear the ball with the left foot by skewing it round. None of them try and clear it with the right foot. So I always used to just gamble. They're going to make a mess of it. So I just gambled all the time. Scored a whole bunch of goals that way.
Brilliant. We've got about 10 minutes left.
So by the way, to anyone who wants to chat with you, because my flight's not till 10 o'clock.
Okay. So we'll be buying Pat the beers then. No, actually, in all seriousness, we should finish at half five formally, but if Pat's around, which is lovely if he is, I mean, you know, knock yourselves out, as they say. But until then, we've got a few more questions from people we haven't asked, or haven't asked questions before. It'd be nice. So anybody? You, sir.
Hi, Pat. Just following on from what you were saying about Courtois, do you think that's the case with some of the defenders as well?
Yeah.
It seems to me they're leaving Cahill open. He's the only out ball. Is that because they think he can't play?
Do you know the loveliest thing is? Do you know everyone sees how fantastic the modern game is and how different all these technical coaches, and we spent our entire careers playing with, make sure that big lumpy centre-half gets the ball, then close them down. So it's ancient. We've always done it. And you filter. And we always used to filter to do this. Now, to be honest, the jargon's a bit better now. And the words they use are better. Oh, it's a high ganging press. Yeah, close them down. You know, we've always done it. They're not very good in the ball. Get them to lump it and we'll get it back again. It's honestly, sometimes it drives you nuts listening to how they want to make it sound more complicated than it is. But in actual fact, yeah, a lot of defenders aren't as technically good in the ball. That's why I love David Luiz, because he's very, very good technically in the ball. That's why I'm a massive admirer of John Stones. John Stones is phenomenal in the ball. And by the way, out of interest, just so you know, it's John Stones is the one who's on 97.1% pass accuracy just now, beating everyone. Right, so everyone, and of course, if you watch certain television shows in football, all they'll ever show you is the one time he gives the ball away. And you're thinking, that's garbage. You wouldn't do that at a midfielder. You wouldn't do that with a fullback. You wouldn't do it. It's just because he's playing. And it's a British disease. We need to get better than that. Christensen's lovely, and he's going to get better and better and better. He will get better. He's too young. Centre halves only are only cooked by about 26, so he's a bit young still. Yeah, and we're giving him some.
It's an interesting point you make about John Stones there, Pat. And you know, as you say, they single out the mistake rather than all the good things he does. I mean, kind of links into a question I wanted to ask you anyway. It kind of links into some sort of a media narrative. So that's the first part of the question. The second part is, I mean, how much are you enjoying the work with Five Live and others?
It's a brilliant job doing media. I'm kind of slightly niche, I think. I mean, I'll never be a match of the day type person. It definitely wouldn't suit me because I would like to be more depth than that. And that's less a football show, more than an entertainment show. And I get that. I understand that. But I like the chance. I love radio because you get the chance to develop a discussion. You can widen it. You can say things that... If I do a radio show or a television show or anything, absolute mantra before I start, I'm going to try and tell you something that you might not know. That's all I've got in my mind. I'm going to try and tell you. There's no point in me telling you how to post. There's no point in me telling you he's a good left back. There's no point. Because you know that. And I'm never going to talk down to football fans. Never talk down to football fans. There's enough people doing that. And even if I get dragged onto a phone in now and again, and you get some real, I won't talk down to people. I'll talk to them like you would. And I get a bit miffed with the fact that it is a bit, it's a bit lowest common denominator sometimes. But then it's not aimed at me, but I will always treat the football fan with respect. And I'll always try and say, look, have you ever noticed this? I mean, I've tried to tell you a couple of things tonight. Hey, have another look at John Stones or have another look at this. Now, they come from the questions, but I've actually went and studied these things to some level. So I love doing it. I love the fact that the BBC allow me to do it. I had a great one last week. Up until recently, if I can fill you in a wee bit of what I've been doing, when I stopped playing football, I was chief executive of a club in Scotland, Motherwell, and player at the same time. That's a bit tricky. That's a show all on its own. But it was really good because having been chairman of the PFA for 5 years, having done a lot of work in media and written a lot, I've kind of got kind of a wide view of a lot of areas of football. I mean, I never wanted to be a manager or a coach. I think it's a mad job. You have to be loony to do that. And it doesn't last. And it's damned unfair. But all the other sides of it is great. But this job currently just now is brilliant because I love travelling. You see different types of teams all the time. You can actually get a great opportunity to widen it. I've actually cut back in it recently, done a bit less. I had four different jobs last year, which was great because I did all the... You wouldn't know it because I made sure they were all in different territories. So I did all BBC Scotland TV's football, but you wouldn't know that here because you don't get it down here. So I did Setanta in Ireland. So I worked once or twice a week in Dublin for Setanta. Do a lot of Chelsea TV, some of you may have seen that as well, and I did Radio 5 Live, and the odd little thing around it. But they were all in different... So you're not sick of the sight of me because I'm not in your face all the time. But last year I decided that it was just too much and I wanted to slightly go away from it because I'm getting to an age now. I think people like me are not needed now. So hopefully in the next year, 2 years, I'll fade away from it and do something else.
Well, I think many of us would say that would be a huge loss because the number of times I hear Chelsea supporters particularly saying, why can't Pat Nevin be on more? Why can't he be on Match of the Day? We're sick to death of these biased idiots talking nonsense. We need somebody who gets Chelsea and who's intelligent. So, you know, we'd find that a huge loss.
I think certain programmes are, they're aimed in a different direction. They're not, they're quite fluffy and, you know, they want a headline. They really just want a headline, and that's what it's all about. It's about a good tweet, a good headline, and I'm not that, and I'm never going to try and be that, and I don't want to be that. You know, so it doesn't interest me greatly, and I did quite a few matches of the day twos when Colin Murray was doing it, and we tried to switch it and move it in a different direction, but they didn't want that, really. They did want to do something completely different, so fair enough. I mean, they make these decisions. I try not, oddly enough, I try not to watch it, because I don't want to steal ideas. So my concepts are be my own. Now, funnily enough, here's a weird one. Can I tell you this one? This is really funny. I could go on all night, but I'll try not to. Carragher and Neville, they do the Monday night one, yeah. Right, so I actually didn't really know for sure, but I think they do, right? So Carragher, I watched him talk about Chelsea. I'm thinking, you are biased against Chelsea. Right? I mean, you are. But... Yes, he doesn't like Chelsea. I don't actually think he hates it particularly, and it's fine. It gets me slightly miffed because you shouldn't have a negativity against anyone. I play for Chelsea and Everton. I don't actually dislike Liverpool. Liverpool is a team. If you play well, great, good on you. You know, so I don't. It kind of upsets me that they can do that, especially if you're on telly. But I was actually getting really annoyed with Carragher. I was so fed up. Anyway, last season, I was up at Burnley. Was it Burnley? Burnley played against some non-league team in the FA Cup and got beat. Lincoln. It was January, wasn't it? So I've walked into the press room beforehand. There's Carragher over there, who I have never spoken to in my life. And he spots me. And he walks over and he goes, "Are you all right, Patsy? Are you all right? All right, mate?" And I'm going, "Oh, it's great to see you. You're a fucking great lad. I love you, man." And I'm going, and I realised he was an Everton fan growing up. And he liked it. And I'm like, shit, I don't know how to react to this at all. Because I'd decided that I couldn't be bothered with him. And he's been really, really nice to me, and he was a bit of a fan. So I kind of talked to him, and I kind of put in the line, by the way, hold back to Chelsea, mate. It's kind of a wee bit obvious, would you? And he kind of had a laugh. But I'll be honest with you, and I've said this out loud, and I work for the BBC, and I wouldn't hide it. They were anti-Chelsea. They were. And I work for the BBC. Yeah. Well, certain areas of it. I mean, if you think when, particularly in Hans... No,
as in the editorial
style. Well, you think of it Hansen at the time, you know, and you think of the amount of time everybody who was on at the time was either Man United or Liverpool. Now, there's a good reason for that. A, they're stuck in Salford, fair enough. But the other reason for it is, think of the people who are controlling that and making decisions. And think of, so there'll be white men of a certain age, right? Who were their heroes? They were Hansen and whatever, Laurel and other. I wouldn't name any of them, but in actual fact, they would. It's only because I don't know who they are. I never got to meet them. So they, you have to think, they're not, they'll tell you and they'll think they're looking for the best talent. They're not. They just want to say, hey, I hang about with so-and-so. You know, and it's kind of a bit of that. So they, I don't know if they're institutionally biased against Chelsea, but certainly pro the people who they thought were hyperstars and will stick by them. And that's maybe the more what it's like in the inside. But certainly, there, I know some of the guys, and there are a few of them who had a real dislike, an outright dislike for only one team, and it was Chelsea. So you weren't being paranoid, just so you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm staying here anyway.
Hang on, Dermot.
I'll come and talk to you in a minute.
Yeah,
Dermot.
Yeah. He's not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm hanging about.
Pat, across all the platforms like Sky, BT, BBC, who in your opinion is the best sort of co-commentator, analyst, and who's the worst?
I'm not a very good judge. To be honest, I'm a terrible judge. Because I kind of got BT, but it's up in the bedroom now. My son watches it all the time. So I don't get to see it that much. There's ones that I don't particularly like and I'll turn down and just watch the game. More often than not, I'll probably turn it down because I don't want to be affected. It's not that I don't like them. I don't want my thinking affected. I want my thinking to be original. It's too often you hear people talking and you think, yeah, well, I heard so-and-so say that 2 weeks ago, and you're just basically parroting them. It's weird when people start parroting your ideas. It happens all the time. It's really strange. But there's the co-coms, I like the guys that I work with. Odd enough, John Murray's fabulous. I got a lot of time from John. Certainly got an awful lot of time for... I'll tell you who's...
Would surprise you. Lovely to see you.
A lot of people would surprise you. Denno's good. Ian Dennis is very good. But in actual fact, for football knowledge, I'll completely and utterly shock you. A guy who's got the most football knowledge and knows it, and I would trust it if he told me something, I would trust his judgment, is Jonathan Pearce. And that would surprise everyone. JP almost certainly is the only one of them who could have been a professional footballer because he was good enough. And he got injured really early on, and he had this infection that affected him, and it affected his weight and things like that. But in actual fact, he's absolutely... And because he's got this big, originally fake, over-the-top style, it wasn't his... He was given that by the guy at Capital who said, what you do is you multiply it by three, you go mental, you go ballistic, and throughout your career, you just slowly but surely bring it down. And he says, in 15, 20 years' time, you'll be doing match of the day. And that guy was right. Richard Park is the correct answer, correct.
Last question, this fine man here.
Pat, thinking about things you do in the media and bring it closer to home, a lot of the stuff that I read personally on Chelsea's official publications can be quite bland and PC, but I think, to me, two of the most interesting things I read is your Tuesday column on the website and your article in the programme. How much free reign do you get on that?
Oh, brilliant question. Fantastic question. I promise to be honest. I'll be honest. And it's really fitting. They've pulled one article.
Right.
in the hundreds, and I mean hundreds, that I've done for the website. And I have done hundreds. I mean, I think it might be 400 and odd or something like that. I've done a lot. I mean, so I've been doing it a long time. They pulled one. And I remember saying to them, look, I don't think you should pull that. I think you should let it run. And they said, well, decisions be made. And I said, that's fine. Okay, we'll just leave it blank this week. And we did. And we moved on. Other than that, about 6-7 weeks ago, they monumentally altered one right at the start of the season. So in all that period, there's been two that I've thought, whoa, steady on. And I'll give you the reason for both of them, right? Because you're dying on. The first one was I wrote my thoughts on the Chelsea pitch owner situation. And they said, I said, I think you should let that run. Because what I was doing is I was giving an encapsulation of both sides of the story. So that anyone reading this who, as far as I knew, because obviously I've got a bit of CPO history, I wanted to make sure that everybody, because not every Chelsea fan does. They don't know all. So especially ones abroad. And obviously that website goes abroad. But it was a very delicate time just before the vote in the time. And they wanted to control the media. And to be fair, I understood it. And I said, but I know I understand that. But I've actually been there before. I've been chief executive of a club. See if you get somebody who's actually in the middle saying, look, there's your point of view. But there's the other point of view. Think about it. And it was a very, very straight piece of where I saw it at the time. But I understood it. And some PR guy somewhere would have said, pull it. Now, that wasn't the club being Pravda. It was a pretty radical thing to put the opposition's point. You know, but they said, no, we'd best not to. And I went, fine, okay. And I wasn't angry with them at the time. Anyway, we started this season, I wrote a piece. I was so happy with it. I was really funny. It was some lines in it where I was laughing out loud. And I've always leave wee jokes and comments from songs and things like that and them faded through. Hardly anyone gets them, but you get the odd one now and again if you happen to have seen that movie. But it was ripped to shreds. They took 300 words out of it. I was like, what the hell is going on? And I'm kind of, I never phone up or anything like that. So I go, Nate phoned them up. So I phoned up Paul, who does it. And somebody answered his phone. I said, where's Paul? And Paul's, oh, and Paul's on holiday. And who's editing? And he said, oh, I'm editing. And I went, you've just never seen it before, have you? And he went, no. And I don't actually think Paul reads it. He just lets it go. Anyway, well, it was a bit near the, and it was supposed to be humorous. And he said, well, I'm doing the job. And he was fearful of the fact that he doesn't know where the lines were. So it wasn't Pravda. From the outside, you'd think, terrible, slashed, and it wasn't Pravda. I was having a laugh at some of the players and some of the previous players and having a joke about, you know, some of the capabilities. But it was done with a lightness. And always when you do those jokes, see, always when you write things like that, the joke must always be you. It must always end on you, in which it did. Right, and they all did. So, but I was really pleased with it, and I thought, oh, well, I'll dull it down for you if you want. But in actual fact, it was a misunderstanding. Other than that, 433 articles, they never touch it.
Well, you make the old
face look beautiful. Thanks. Thanks for saying that.
I was going to say, you should write for CFC UK because the editor's much, much more kind. Really.
Never asked, man. Never asked, man.
One of mine ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I actually say just now, I get two at the moment. You have to look on your system because I'm getting two every day. Every day. And, at least I've mentioned it.
Brilliant. I'm afraid that wraps up the Q&A with Pat. I just want to say on behalf of everybody, thank you, Pat. Thank you so much. I've been trying to get Pat to do something with us pretty much since we started as a trust. I think you've just seen why today. He's brilliant. So thank you.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.